We are recording. Hi, everybody. My name is Todd Adams. I'm with Zen Parenting Radio. This is Zen Talk number 57, I think. And it's our first evening Zen Talk. And we are excited to have you. I only have one question, but I'm sure we'll be fine.
I can always come up with things to say. So don't worry.
This we know. I'm going to start out with a story, though.
Okay.
Yesterday was the 2 days after my birthday, and I decided that I wanted to have a cash flow pizza party. And so we play this game called Cash Flow, and
nobody knows what that is.
It's a personal financial management game. So think of like your least favorite subject being turned into a board game.
Correct. That's the part.
Look at the kitty cat.
Okay.
The problem is it's my favorite subject because I want to empower my daughters to become really good personal financial managers so that they can be independent young women and take care of themselves. Mm-hmm. So we played yesterday and there all three of our daughters were pretty distracted.
And I think that
we played for an hour.
I think your vision was skewed. Like, I think because you assumed people didn't want to play, you saw something that really wasn't happening. Because I didn't think they were that bored.
Well,
I was winning the game.
Skylar, so. in the game, you land on a space and you get a child. And Skylar kept walking upstairs to get a doll to represent everybody's children.
But that's fun. That's what makes it fun. We don't want to play a game and, like, we don't want to focus.
Sweetie, is it as fun as learning income statements?
But it's simultaneous. We can play with the dolls while learning income statements. That's life.
Right. So if that happened once, but she kept going up and downstairs. And
because
then
we kept having children.
And then she started babysitting one of the other person's
Correct.
Babies.
Right.
And that wasn't part of the game.
I know. But see, I really do think you went in thinking nobody wants to do this. And so you saw that. But I really, when you quit, I was shocked.
I know.
Because I was like, we're having a good time.
If you surveyed each of our three daughters and I say 1 to 4, 1 means you want to quit right now, 4 means this is the best game ever, I'm guessing all of them would have said 1.
But all of them were willing to play for you because it was your birthday. So
but they weren't willing to play the way I wanted them to play.
And that's the issue in life all the time.
No, they're supposed to like it.
Okay, let's go.
First question, and then we're going to go to Nikki because Nikki has – actually, let's start with Nikki just because it'll give us some more time in between. Nikki, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Hi.
I hope you don't hear too much of my kids yelling in the background.
It's okay.
All right, we don't mind.
My question is my daughter's, we made the decision last week with the support of her psychologist that she's doing, it's like a health school, so she's at home and she's studying online and a teacher comes to our home to support her because she's now been diagnosed with autism spectrum as well as ADHD, anxiety, aphid and dysgraphia. So it's just been overwhelming and too much for her. So she's at home. But now the problem is my son is feeling that it's not fair and that why can't he be at home too because he also has anxiety and he's been treated with mental health for anxiety and he throws up regularly. So today I've got both of them home because Noah was throwing up a lot last night and all this morning. And I said, does it bother you that Becky's at home? And he said, yes, it's not fair. Why does she get to stay home and I don't? And it's just... I had a go at explaining that, but it's hard. I don't want to throw my daughter under the bus of hers is more than, and I don't want to scare him about her sister he loves very much. So I just some advice on words.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So real quick, Nikki, how old is your daughter and how old is your son?
My daughter's 14 and my son turned 12 yesterday.
Gotcha. And you tried to, do your best to kind of explain to your son why it is the way it is and it didn't land well?
Yeah, he just sort of curled up in a ball and put a rug over himself and said, you know, I'm going to sleep now. But I think he goes, well, how come her anxiety is more than mine? and she gets more time. I don't know. I'm putting words in his mouth. I don't know. Mm-hmm. All I know is he's throwing out and wanting to be at home. And I'm just feeling like that could escalate. We're right at the start. This is week two. And he had 50% of time off school last year. I tried to do that. We will do whatever both children need, and that could be different. That was that it doesn't need to be the same for it to be the right thing for him and the right thing for Becky. And then they're not necessarily the same things that are right. But yeah, it's hard.
Mm-hmm. I imagine. Okay, I'm going to mute you and I'm going to let my sweetie take a whack at it.
Well, I don't know if I have an answer except to the sentence you just said, I think is like the right thing to say to him, which is, you know, right now, this is what we're doing with your sister. And you right now, it doesn't seem like, or just because she's staying home doesn't mean that that's necessarily the right path for you. And that because she's getting this kind of attention right now doesn't mean that he won't. It's just a right now kind of thing. Like that's, you know, like there's this great, you know, quote that you can use with kids where, when kids say, who do you love best? And, you know, kids like to say that. And
Kid do you love best? Right.
And yeah, which kid do you love best? Who do you love the best? You know, that kind of, and most of the time they're joking around, but sometimes there's an underlying question and it's whoever needs me the most in this moment. And meaning that it's not really about that I love someone more, but sometimes my attention needs to be put on one of you more right now. Not forever, not always, not for every day after, but right now we're assessing some things with your sister. And, you know, what you're saying is that your son is also demonstrating some anxious behaviors, but it sounds like him staying home isn't an option, right, Nikki? Like, your son, I'm only saying that because you may be beating yourself up or feel guilty about something that you can't, like he can't stay home too, correct?
Well,
is it in his best interest to stay home or no?
No.
Okay. Yeah.
He's best to be with friends and live, you know, he's not overwhelmed. Mm. Last term he only missed 3 days of school. So he's coping, he's got friends, he's in a good place. The anxiety he's feeling is related to living with his sister. So having all day with his sister is not a good idea.
Yes, and this kind
of... No matter how close they are.
Yeah, and I know you don't want to throw your daughter under the bus and you don't have to say anything negative about her, but this kind of very blunt conversation is completely fine. Like, I want to make sure you're okay, and I see your anxiety, and I know I can see what you experience. I'm with you. But, you know, you, all those things you just said, you having this group of friends, you getting out of the house and having time away from all of us and having your own life, all of these things seem to be in your best interest, even though they can be difficult sometimes. Like your sister, you know, he has right now, maybe in a moment of anxiety, assessed that his sister has a better deal than him. But the truth is, he has more capability than she does. And you don't, and saying that is not throwing her under the bus. And because you're not saying, oh, you're saying right now you have the capability. So you're empowering him. You have the capability to manage your daily experience at school, even though I know you have some anxiety. You're not saying, oh no, I know, but you can do it. And right now your sister, right now, because this could change, your sister cannot. And so it's being very black and white about it, and not feeling guilty about it. And because things change fast, like this is not forever, but right now this is what your family's doing.
Has this, compromise their relationship with each other? Like, is he more pissed at her now because she gets to stay home?
No, they're really, really close.
Oh, good.
They're both looking after each other. They're quite codependent. So
interesting.
It's more, I think Becky wants him to stay home with her. So I think that's playing into it as well, that she might be encouraging him a bit.
Yeah, because that would serve her needs. Like, you know, and that they get to be in a family together, live under the same roof, but he has to have his own, whatever that means.
You know, I really like that.
Yeah. And we all deserve our own, you know, we have a family and we all live together and we live under the same roof and we're so blessed to do so, but all of us need a different aspect of our lives, and supporting each of our kids and having that is really healthy for them.
So Nikki, how are you doing emotionally? It sounds like it might be impacting you a little bit. Are you able to kind of set a healthy boundary around the situation? Because it sounds like it's a problem that you want to fix, just like the rest of us parents want to fix all of our kids' problems. And I think that there's probably some space for your son just to be disappointed. And do you allow yourself to kind of go into his disappointment, or can you stay above it? Or does it depend on what time it is?
Yeah, it depends. Last night I just walked away, but my husband picked it up, you know, so you just got to have turnabouts at times. Mm-hmm. So if it's after 10 o'clock, it's my husband's.
Good.
If it's
totally me too.
Six, it's mine.
Yeah. I'm no good after a certain time. I just don't have it.
Well, no. And this is...
But I have been talking to an online counselor, and I am doing mindfulness for 10-15 minutes a day just to help that. And after a morning, I'm going upstairs and being away for an hour, so get Becky up in the morning, and we walk the dog together and we spend time together and do that first bit of homework, and then I just step away for an hour.
This is emotionally charged stuff, and it sounds like you have some type of self-care practice or meditation practice, which is good, but, you know, it's really hard to stay calm in an intensely emotional thing, and I would just say practice on the easier stuff, the smaller stuff. Kathy and I just did an interview last Friday, and, you know, it's really hard to stay calm and, you know, in a healthy way set boundaries when your children are struggling with something. So I would say try your best to kind of pick situations that are a little bit less emotionally charged and see if you can kind of stay calm, stay grounded, stay centered in those ones. And if you could do that enough, then next time or next week, because this problem will go away, by the way, you know that.
Or it'll evolve.
It'll evolve into something else. And your brain will get a new thing to worry about.
I'm getting a lot of advice at the moment about, oh, she's autistic, set up a schedule, set up a routine, da da da. And I'm like, yeah, I'm just focusing on getting her up in the morning.
Yes. First things first.
Yeah.
And getting her to do that 2 hours of learning. That's and making sure she goes outside. Those are my goals.
Yeah.
And you know, just one, I know we've already given this resource a million times on this podcast because we had Debbie Reber on. But listen, you know, when you need some support, listen to the Tilt Parenting podcast. You know, if you've read Debbie Reber's book already, Differently Wired, you may have, and obviously we've talked with her, but her podcast is really helpful in, you know, sometimes it's just these kind of more extreme situations where it's like, not everyone can understand my morning. You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing. And I feel like her guests and her conversations are really... Yeah. Really insightful, because you want to have a tribe around you like that. You know, people, obviously we are, but then people who are like, yeah, my mornings are pretty damn difficult too. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
for sure. Anything else before we move on, Nikki?
No, I listened to you. No, I think it's that, because that was my other question really was, I'm finding it anxious today because I need Becky to have done her 2 hours work. And I keep saying, Becky, you're starting yet. And we're at 12 o'clock today and she hasn't started yet. And that's stressful for me. I just want to tick it off the box that she's done it. And so that's my only thing. I would feel better if it was on a schedule and she was doing it.
Right,
she's
of
not.
Course.
She's not doing that yet.
Not yet. That's a good way to say it.
It's funny how kids don't agree with the plans that we make for them, isn't it?
Very rarely do they.
Okay, so I'm going to mute you and we're going to move on. Thanks, Nikki. Appreciate that. So I see mostly friendly, familiar faces, but we have a few people that maybe are joining for the first time or So if you're new to this, there's a chat box on the right. If you can't see it, you can just hover the cursor over the screen and click on the chat box. And that's a way that we can all connect with each other while we're going through this Zen talk. But the floor is open. I have a question that I forget who gave it to me. That is a good one. But if somebody wants to ask a question, either like physically raise their hand so we could see you, or you can just put your cursor in the box and there's three dots and it gives the opportunity to raise your hand. But so here's a question. You ready, sweetie?
Yeah.
I think it's really good. Why does everyone think of someone else that would benefit from the advice in a self-development book when in reality you are reading the book for yourself and the only person you have any reasonable chance to influence is yourself? I've just about reined this habit in myself, but I still feel that pull to give advice to others. Also, I get a lot of recommendations from my husband about stuff I should listen to. That is a very familiar question. One is, I'm totally guilty as charged. I think I'm also a little bit better in, you know, whenever I'm reading a book or reading a blog or listening to a podcast, I think of the perfect person that ought to listen to it. And depending on the subject matter, if it's kind of a deep dive into self, sometimes it's like a sports podcast. I'm like, oh, you'll enjoy this. But sometimes it's like, oh, this is how to be more mindful. And this family member can really use this. One is, I can't tell myself to not do that. I think I'm hardwired to say, I don't need this. I'm perfect. You need this so you can fix yourself so that I don't have to deal with your crap. But when that voice in my head actually says that, then that's my cue to look in the mirror and see how it is that I can use this information and not how it could be disseminated to somebody else. That's the one thing is it's going to happen. At least for me, I think it's going to always happen, but it's just another excuse to kind of look at yourself. But I think in the beginning, I was really, really jacked up to share everything I learned. And, you know, Kathy and I are lucky enough to be in positions where we can teach. Like I work with a men's group and we have the podcast. So it's a little bit easier for us because we have a platform. But when I'm trying to tell a buddy that he needs to be more mindful, I might as well be just, I think I'm wasting my breath.
Well, unless they ask.
Unless they ask.
But I think the assumption in the question is that we're doing something wrong when we do that. Like if we listen to a podcast or we read a book and it makes us think of somebody, there's nothing wrong with that. I think the next choice is the big choice, which is this person open-minded? Are they looking for this kind of thing? Is this a discussion I have with them already? And if it is, then they love it. I have friends who send me podcasts all the time. This made me think of you. Or you may like this because they reference blah, blah, blah. I love that. I consider that referrals. I don't consider those people, I don't think about it as like, ooh, they're telling me I need to work on something. That's why you have to be really thoughtful. Like I remember when, it was a couple of years, like my last book came out in 2014. And I remember some people are like, well, I'll buy it for myself, but I'm not going to get it for any of my friends because then they'll think that I'm telling them they need to be a better parent. I'm like, really? Like giving your friends like a book about how to feel better about your parenting would make them think you're criticizing them. And they were like, yeah. So I give that example because you want to be thoughtful about who you recommend things to. But I also think that, you know, so on that note, so those people maybe don't send stuff to them. But the thing, you know, we are not super objective about ourselves. You know, like when we're reading something, we're usually projecting outward. Like, sometimes I can see myself very clearly in a book or hear something that I need in a podcast. I think I'm always open to it, but we're always kind of projecting out like who else could benefit from this. And there's different stages of our own, you know, evolving where at the very beginning, all we're doing is just telling everybody how they need this book or they need this author or that's like stage one. I don't want to be too assumptive here, but I can usually tell where people are in their self-awareness, self-help, linear. What am I trying to say? Like where they are in their, like
the path,
I guess, is there's like phases. Like there's people who are like completely evangelizing and that's usually at the beginning. And then sometimes there's this middle part where they think they get it. They understand it. They've been through some stuff and now here I am. That's a phase two. because then you get on the other side of that and you realize you do know a lot of things, but you're not practicing it. And then you start practicing it and you realize you're like everybody else. And then it's this cycle. So you can kind of tell where people are. And, you know, I say that because there are, usually it's at that stage one where everybody's kind of pushing their books on other people. But there's nothing wrong with like reading a book, and I suggest things to you all the time, but you sometimes take me up on it and you sometimes don't.
Yeah. You know, the one glaring example is Kathy read, I think, The Power of Now, mm-hmm. or A New Earth. No, I think it was probably Power of Now by mm-hmm. Eckhart Tolle. And she's like, you might like this guy. And I don't read books usually. I typically listen to them.
Well, this was like 15 years ago.
Right. But I was still able to get like books on tape at the library and put the CD in the CD player. It wasn't an app on your phone. But anyways.
Right. But what I mean is that when I suggested The Power of Now to you, we weren't even doing podcasting or anything.
No, it was way back when.
Ago, yeah.
So, and then I listened to Eckhart Tolle's voice and it drove me up a wall. I couldn't understand him. He's got a thick accent. And so Kathy didn't push it on me. That's what's great. Like, here's the deal. I think you can offer it and then let it go. And, you know, I think if you're really self-evolved and I'm not here yet, where you don't even offer it and you just trust that the universe will guide this person to this book without your help. But I'm not there. I'm more like...
But do you really think that's the best thing? Like, if I listen to a podcast and I think of one of my girlfriends who's struggling with something, I send it to her mm-hmm. as an act of love. I'm not sending it to her as a judgment. Mm-hmm. It's something, and again, that's about our relationship. If I was not walking the walk myself,
but
then it would be a judgment.
A lot of people do that, including me.
Exactly. Well, this is why I talked about the stages of evolving, because if someone is not walking the walk themselves and they're telling to everybody, read this book and do this and do this, and I'm going to tell you how, that's annoying. But if you're talking about like someone in your family or your best friends and you know their intimate story, you know them really well. Like my girlfriend that I just sent a podcast to, she's gone through a really difficult time and I know a lot of what she's going through. So I knew this podcast would be supportive. And I don't say, you've got to listen to this. It's the only way. I'm like, here's something that made me think of you. It's her choice.
Well, and this is we're kind of getting off track a little bit, and I may have shared this in the podcast or maybe on the last Zen Talk. But there's certain things that I listen to that I'm like, Kathy, you got to listen to this. But there's other podcasts that I'm like, oh, she might like it. She might not. But I have not really differentiated that. And I know that there's like a lot of, you know, like we're having Gemma Hartley on in a few weeks on this Zen Talk. And I know that that message is a message that a lot of moms would love to have their husbands to listen to. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there be like, you know, you do need to differentiate, like, you know, if you're constantly sending something to your husband, like, oh, you got to listen to this so you can understand me better. But then this message, whether it's Gemma Hartley or somebody else, is like, listen, it's really important to me to have you listen to this.
So pick and choose wisely.
So yeah, discern a little bit. And what I do with Kathy is I just came up with a numbering system because that's the way my brain works. And if it's a number one, I'm like, please listen to this right away. And a three is like only if you get to it, and two is somewhere in between. Like that's kind of what I do.
Well, and you know, I'm looking at the question that this person wrote again. And, you know, basically she said, you know, why do we think of other people when in reality we're reading the book and we're the only person that we can change? That's the thing. I'm getting to the core of this question now. And really it's the intention. If you are reading a book and you read it and you say, ooh, I want my husband to change, so I'm going to give him this book. That's a very different intention. Then I love you and I thought this might be helpful to you. Mm-hmm. And we can feel people's intention. I can like, you know, if I gave you a podcast about how to not leave socks on the floor, then I'm trying to change you. You know, I'm trying to like give you a hint about something.
Right.
But if I send you a podcast about healthy masculinity, it's because I think you'll be interested in it for your work. So I think there is a difference. It goes back to that self-awareness thing, is what is your intention? And like Todd said, I think you can discern in that if you listen to something and you say, oh my, like I remember when I was finally figuring out like that I got the word empath and I understood, this was like probably 10 years ago, but I finally understood I was an empath. I was like, Todd, read this, look at this. Cause I wanted him to understand what I've been trying to explain to him. And that was super important to me that he understood it. But I don't do that
because
anymore.
The first 10 years of our life, I would either secretly or not so secretly make fun of Kathy because she did not want to answer the door when the pizza man came to deliver the pizza.
Or you were disparaging of my choices. You would say, no, you got to buck up or you got to. And I was like, but I don't, I'm not like you. And mm-hmm. there was this, I think Todd, in a lot of partnerships and friendships, people think they're right and that you're doing it wrong. And what I needed him to understand is we are built completely differently. He totally gets it now, but that kind of book I would offer to him and say, not you need to change, but I hope you can understand me better. Mm-hmm. Like, here's something that you can understand what I mean when I get downloads or that I feel other people's feelings. And that, now that's just a foregone conclusion.
Right.
So that'd be my answer.
Okay. We're going to go over to Amanda. I'm going to lower her hand and then I'm going to unmute her.
Hi, Amanda.
Hey, Amanda, are you?
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Hi. Where are you calling from?
From New York.
Okay. New York. And have you joined us for a Zen Talk? I apologize if you have, and I don't remember.
It was a long time ago, like when you first started, but now I can do the evening one. So it works out.
I'm so glad. We're glad you're here. So what is your question?
So my question is something that I have thought about for a long time, and it's hard. It's painful to talk about. And so I'm not quite sure how to articulate it best, but basically, it actually ties in with the previous question. So I feel as though years ago, I was the one saying, like, how do I get my husband to follow along? And how do I get him to join? And I'm like, you know, I've evolved from that and definitely understand that my self-awareness is my own journey. And this is about me and not about him or anyone else. And I think I'm now in a place where I have a lot of loneliness over the fact that my husband doesn't have the same interest in being self-aware.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a hard place to be because I have a marriage that is good enough in a lot of ways. So it's not about ending my marriage because my husband isn't on a self-awareness journey the way I am.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also the thing that, and this is like in my darkest moments, I tell myself, you know, if I were to have married someone else who also had the self-awareness, or if I were to search for a spouse today,
mm-hmm.
because self-awareness is such a big part of who I am and always was, but I wasn't able to understand that when I was younger. And so it's a painful thought to have, mm-hmm. that maybe I would look for someone different. Mm-hmm. And yet there's so many great things. And so I completely get that I can't change who he is, and I don't want to. There's just sadness. And I don't know if it's mm-hmm. about grieving that he's not on the same journey as I am. And part of it too, this loneliness goes back to my own childhood and never really feeling understood. So I also don't have like that one friend that also gets it completely, mm-hmm. or that I feel so connected. So it's more than him. And I think also I could be with someone else and feel the same exact way. So it's probably a lot more to do with me than anything,
mm-hmm.
but it's a painful realization to have. And when we're fighting or things aren't going well, or the kids are a nightmare or whatever's going on, I immediately go to that place of,
yep.
If he just differently or better. And I don't want to feel that because it's not fair.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Yeah, I get that.
Wow. So. Okay. I'm going to mute.
So I don't know if Jim really is in there, but
I have some thoughts.
I think we totally get you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to mute you and we might bring you back, but just for now. So first thing is, I just want to honor you. What wonderful vulnerability you are and you're displayed in asking that question. So thank you for that. You know, the first thing is, I feel like the advice I'm about to give, you've already processed through. But what I was going to say is that when in the beginning you really wanted your husband to change, it sounds like you've processed all the way through that. No, not all the way, but otherwise you wouldn't be asking this question. But what I was going to say is, from what energy are you getting him to want to change? Like, are you doing it from a place of husband, you're not good enough? Or are you doing it from a place of, this is truly what I need in order to be, you know, realize the, you know, the way that this marriage is supposed to be? Because if you can communicate that message in a way, and I don't know how you communicated it to him up till now, But if you can do it in a from a compassionate and loving place, and he still doesn't want to change, I feel like that there, this is gray. This is not black. This is not white. Because the one extreme is, oh, if you're not going to change, I'm leaving you. And the other extreme is, I am fine. This is the way it is. And it's neither of those two extremes. Do you know what I mean?
I absolutely do. And I think even though, you know, I don't want to speak for you, Amanda, I think I feel like this isn't the first time we've talked about this. And I think she has been compassionate and all those things that you're saying. I don't think there's been an element of you must change. But, you know, one thing that might be helpful is instead of thinking about self-awareness and personal growth as like, it's like a... like something either is discussable or not discussable, or either something we have in common or we don't have in common. That's kind of a false dichotomy versus this is your area of interest. Just like maybe sports is an area of his interest. Just like you like the color blue and he likes the color red. Like, I guess my point is in conversation, he does not have to read the same books, agree with the things you're saying to be a good listener about what you're interested in. He could, like, I have a girlfriend named Tammy that some of you, I don't think anyone on here would know, but I've known her forever and she's really awesome.
She runs a bookstore.
And yeah, she runs the bookstore at our Zen Parenting Conference, my friend Tammy. So if you've seen her, she's this really beautiful woman. And she is like a medium. And she's really spiritual and very connected to animals and nature. Yeah, she's, and her husband is a fireman. He's like not interested at all. And that's not a deal breaker because he listens to her, but he's like, yep, I don't see the ghost. You know, like he's not seeing what she's seeing, but he gets her. And that's what a relationship is. So like, it's not about, I read this book, he read this book. Like that's a lot of what, you know, Amanda, Esther Perel's books might be interesting to you and her podcast. Esther Perel has a podcast. I don't know if you know about it, but it's called Where Should We Begin? And she takes couples through therapy. And also, and so you kind of get to hear their therapy session. And they talk about things like this, like, you should have differences. You should have different perspectives. And the key is what you really want is not husband be interested in what I'm interested in.
Listen to me.
It's husband hear me and respect what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to agree. Todd doesn't agree with everything I say. And I think sometimes I say things that are really out there and he glazes over sometimes. We were just talking about that today. Todd's a glazer. When I'm telling him a long story, all of a sudden he's like, but if I say, you know what, I think I'm losing you or whatever. And he's like, okay, you know, like it's not, I don't need him to agree, but I do need him to understand it's my area of interest. And I don't want to be like, and he needs to respect me. Cause it's, I just want you to know me, mm-hmm. You know, like you think about this all the time. This is like your sports team is evolving and self, you know, personal growth. And you want to share with him your heart. And if he can just hear it and say, oh, interesting. And then you did, oh, and then you're going to do, okay. He doesn't need to agree. You'll be okay with that, I think. So it's kind of, maybe when you approach him about it next time. And first of all, let me just backtrack. The dark thoughts, don't let them scare you too much. I'm not saying I know what's going to happen or that it's all going to be okay. I'm not trying to be Glinda, you know, and be like, oh, it's fine. But everybody has dark thoughts like that. So you're not alone, Amanda. Mm. Like people always have those feelings of, oh, if this didn't work, that means that I did the wrong thing or I made the wrong choice. Like that's called anxiety and we all have it. And then that thought sends you into an anxious cycle, I'm willing to bet, you know, because you're like, I shouldn't be thinking this. Other people don't think this. Yes, they do. I'm a therapist. People think these things a lot. Now, the only thing that I would say to you is if you feel as if you're being unheard, if you feel you're being continuously disrespected, if you feel like there's not a friendship, if you feel like mm-hmm. you are being abused or unsafe, that's a whole different thing. That's like something where I would want you to first get support from a therapist. And when I say abused, I mean emotionally, you know, and walk through this. Mm-hmm. But if it's we're friends, I love my husband, things are good, but I just wish we had this in common. That's manageable. Mm-hmm. What, do you agree with that?
I do. I'm actually, Dawn wants to comment, and then we're going to go to Amanda.
Okay.
Dawn, are you there?
Yes. Hi. Amanda, that was such a great question. So I also wanted to thank you for asking that, because I've had that in my head so much, and I don't know that I've ever actually allowed myself to even form it into words. So I was like, would you saying that out loud? And I'll share some of the things that have gone on in my head, if this is helpful too. But I'm a deep diver. When I'm interested in something, I go deep. And I drive my husband bonkers sometimes, because I get so rabid fascinated with things, and he's like exhausted with me talking after 5 minutes about it. So honestly, Team Zen and this community, gosh, that's been such a lifesaver for me, because he can't give me what this is. And in order to, and for me to place that expectation on him, it's never going to happen for a million reasons. One of which is I'm just a completely different person. I process the world differently. He was raised very differently with me. I feel like he'd have to be reborn as a child into a completely different family and have completely different circumstances to even begin to be in this sort of a discussion. Mm-hmm. So I like to think that my self-awareness journey is just going to rub off positively on him somehow. And then, you know, you guys are my, I mean, team. It's literally a team, you know, this is our team. It's funny, I've never thought about it like that before, but I just want to say thank you so much for voicing that out loud. Wow, that was awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome, Dawn. And before I unmute Amanda, because I want to hear what she has to say, wasn't there a Sex in the City where they're kind of just being like, these guys are just not who we want them to be? And it was about soulmates.
They were each other's soulmates.
They're on the bus, mm-hmm, going to the casino.
That's actually a different one.
Oh,
you're
is that a different
you're
one?
Thinking about the one when Carrie turns 35.
Okay.
And
wow,
so
35, she was old.
She was so old. I thought she was old.
But no, like in, you know, Dawn, I appreciate what it is that you're saying, and it doesn't necessarily have to be Team Zen, but Amanda, if you could find, whether it's Team Zen or your next door neighbor or your college roommate, whatever it is, as long as you can express these important ideas, beliefs, behaviors that you're reading to somebody, I know you want to share it with your soulmate, but to Kathy's point, Esther Perel, who's somebody we strongly believe in her message, polarity is a really, really
important
part of a relationship. And Kathy and I cannot be more different in certain ways. And then in other ways, we're very similar. So I would just say, you know, just if he is not that person for you, then go find it and see if you can find in your heart that this is exactly the guy that you're supposed to be with.
Well, and you know, Todd was just saying Team Zen or friend or, and I would say and, like you need to have a bunch of different, like I have, you know, Todd and I talk about these things obviously, but then I always have lunch with my friend Annie, and then I go see my friend Jessica. And then I've got like my women's circle.
You got guy friends from high school.
I've got my guy friends, but those are, they don't, I don't talk
right,
about
but
this
that's
stuff
a part,
with them.
But that's a part of your,
oh,
you
my,
know,
my just, team. And the thing is you may say, but I don't know who that is. And you're right. Like these are not, sometimes I think we get in our head about people we're married to or friends as if they have to be all the things to us. Like, mm-hmm, we'll hear someone's story like, oh, and these were my best friends. And we envision that they're there for each other in hard times and they're calling each other all the time. And it's not like that. Like somebody that you can meet for coffee once a month can be a best friend. And you may not even talk to them any other days of the week. Like you're busy, you know, like, but there is a connection. Like my friend Annie is probably the best person. She and I meet once a month. She's at the conference a lot, Annie Burnside. She and I meet like once a month and we have like a 4-hour talk. I'm not kidding. Like we just go there. There's nobody else I can do that with, but we sometimes socialize with them, but not that much, but I know she's there. And I know she gets me and sees me. And there, you know, like having a women's circle or you may not be best friends with the people in your women's circle, but they see you in the way you're looking for. Mm-hmm. Do you see what I mean? You get love and family with your husband, and then you get the validation and being seen from other people. And that's okay. That's the puzzle of our lives. We piece together our lives with all sorts of different people.
Kelsey says, thanks all. I tend to talk it all out with girlfriends on the similar path of self-awareness, work, and motherhood. Then my partner tends to get the summary once I'm able to distill it after talking with friends.
Beautiful.
That was nice. All right. So let's go back to Amanda. Amanda, what do you think?
Yeah, this is very helpful. I really like the idea of reframing it almost as an interest I have.
Yes.
Because my husband is very interested in sports. And
yes,
I think when I get really frustrated, I don't want to say I put down that interest, but I get annoyed by that interest. So this helps me in two ways. One, to think of that this is just my interest, and I also need to maybe better respect his interest.
Yes.
And you know, he is incredibly supportive. You know, I've gone to the conference for 2 years in a row. He's all about me going. Tonight I was like, I need from 8 to 9. He's like, you got it. I'll take care of the kids. He is so supportive of my journey. And that's why I say it's not all bad. Mm-hmm. And this really helps. And I also know that if I were with someone exactly like me or with the same interest, that would create other problems.
Exactly.
So the way he balances me out is actually a really positive thing. He's the, you know, the outgoing one who creates our social plans, and we're, you know, like, the balance is really good. And when I'm in a good headspace, I see that. And,
yeah,
and I think sometimes I protect myself by telling myself a story that he doesn't quite get me, or I don't have a friend that really understands. But I think it's sometimes I'm not vulnerable enough with him or with anyone, maybe for fear of, you know, vulnerability is hard, and I'm afraid of what the response will be. But when I do really sit down and have a heart to heart and tell him everything, he's so compassionate and there with me and hearing me. So this was helpful.
I have
and
one.
Thank you, Dawn.
Yeah.
I have one.
Dawn was like shaking her head even when you were saying that, like she's on the same page with you.
Yeah. I have one more invitation of a challenge for you. And
invitation of a challenge.
Yeah. So here's the deal, Amanda. Whatever it is that your husband finds really interesting that you find boring, whether it's New York Knicks basketball or whatever it is, if you could figure out a way to truly from your heart get interested in it, I'm not saying it's going to come back. I'm not saying it's going to be reciprocated, but just as an experiment to try to mix something up and do something different. You know, we've come up with some ideas of finding girlfriends and all that. And I think if I were going to choose what things to do, I would start with that part, you know, find the girlfriends that you could talk to about self-awareness or all that. But then in addition to that, you know, don't do it just so you know that he might do it back. Do it because you really want to find what he finds interesting and find that value, whatever it is. Do you have any idea what pops to mind, what that might be?
In terms of sports?
In terms of anything that he's interested in that you think is the biggest snooze fest of all time.
I mean, I don't know. I have to think about it. Because I do like sports and I like watching, but I don't like watching every single freaking game that's on. So I don't know. I'll think about it.
Well, and even, you know, like, and it can be different. Like, Todd's talking about grand, but I'm even thinking smaller. Like, when he's telling you about a game, or like, oh my gosh, you're not going to believe what happened in that game. And then to even ask some questions about it, even though you're not super interested. And again, when Todd's like, you know, there's no way to be like, no, I really do like this. You can't pretend, but you can get curious. You can get curious, but you can also just come from a place as this is how I love you.
Yeah.
I ask questions. Like, sometimes I'm not really interested in what Todd is telling me, but the way love is a verb, you have to practice it. I love you by asking. I don't have to carry it. I don't have to agree with it, but I see you, and whatever you're interested in, it means something to you. Therefore, it means something to me. And I think that even though our intention is not necessarily, okay, now next.
It's my turn.
It happens naturally. And when it doesn't, I have had to say, like, for example, Todd has talked about something and then maybe it's my turn and then he gets a text and he's like, gets distracted. And I will say, hold on, I didn't have my, and I don't get passive aggressive and say, oh, you know, you don't care. I just say, listen, now my turn. I listened to about the Sox game for 15 minutes. So now my turn. I got this new book. And he's just like, oh, that's interesting. And if he asked me about it 2 days later, it'd be kind of fun. Like, but like, I do like baseball, so this doesn't really count. But when Todd and I were going to more games, which we don't go to much anymore, I, at the game, started, what's it called?
Drinking a lot of beer?
No, keeping score. Oh. And that made the game fun for me because I was learning to keep score. I didn't really, and then I knew everyone's name, and then it became more fun. I'm not the huge baseball fan he is, but it's like, it's kind of like what you're asking for from your husband, which is be interested in the things I'm interested in, see me, understand me. And you don't have to overdo it, but just reciprocate that. Whatever you want, he does too.
Right. And I would categorize that as transactional. And, you know, there's three different levels of
relationship. But wait a second. Before you categorize that as transactional, because I know where you're going and you're saying, but not everything is about getting something back. It's just about loving somebody.
That's level three, sweetie. I'm working towards it.
But you just said what I said was transactional.
I'm not saying what you said was transactional. I'm saying generally speaking, sometimes, and that's how I started it with Amanda, was – don't do it just so he can do it back to you. Do it because you're really curious because you love this man and he's interested in certain things. Just, and that's level three. And, you know, the model that I use sometimes that I learned from Tony Robbins, level one is think of a 2-year-old who's just very into me, like narcissistic. That's what 2-year-olds do. Level two relationship is transactional, where I'll do this for you if you do this back for me. And level three is when, like, my needs are to meet Kathy's needs. Like, that's when I'm at level three. And I sometimes think I fluctuate between two. There's times when we're very transactional, and then there's times when I'm at that level three. So that, and, you know, some people are like, well, that's stupid. Why would you put levels on a relationship? That's just the way my brain works. But when I'm in a certain state, I ask myself, like, okay, where am I? Am I at level two or level three? So I would just encourage you to kind of think in terms of that, if it serves you and if it helps. And I'm going to move over to Dawn because she wanted to ask another question.
This is actually inspired by Amanda's question, made me think of this question. One of my husband's self-interests, I get couple of his self-interests, I get judgy about. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you two examples. He loves cause. He's obsessed with all things cause. He loves houses. And I find myself my whole interest in self-awareness. Why do the things we do? Why do we like the things that we like? And I have really struggled with over the years with my attitudes towards money. And I think I have a hard time being interested in the things that he's interested in because I have my own judgments about them. If that makes any sense.
Completely.
And I don't know. It's just something I've noticed. I haven't like said anything about it, but I literally physically tighten up sometimes when we'll drive past a house and he's like, sweet house. And I'm like, that's another thing where we're really different, and I've never really quite known how to, because I know it bothers him. So
bothers him that you judge it?
Yeah. I feel bad about it too, and it's like knee jerk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, I was going to say that you already know this, so this is really good because you recognize that all that's yours. Because it's funny that you say my husband loves cars and houses, because that's what my dad loved, cars and houses. And not in where he was like buying them all the time. He just loved to look at them. And I was telling Todd that my dad used to take me to the car show in Chicago every year. And I had to go every year, and he would explain to me why this new car was good. And my sister's husband, Drew, my brother-in-law, he loves cars. And there is like this, And I just found out that my niece's girlfriend loves cars. Did you know that? Mm-hmm. So I was like, you have to, you know, like there is sometimes the reason people love things is not the reason that we think. And this is actually an opportunity for you because you've connected money and finances to houses and cars. And I don't know your husband, so I can't be like, no, you're wrong. But next time he drives by a house and says, sweet house, you're going to have the knee-jerk reaction because it's just what you've done and it's your trigger. And I get that. So take a deep breath and say, tell me about that house. What do you love about it? Not in a, what do you love about it, but like, really tell me. And he may say something like, it's just so big. And it's like, what would you do with all those rooms? Like, you can sustain a conversation because he has the same knee-jerk reaction in liking it. Do you know what I mean? Like he may not even know why he likes it. I know why my dad loved cars. And it was a part of his childhood and it was something he knew how to do. And it's something he knew how to work on and he appreciated it. And it was kind of, it became an endearing quality of his, rather than something that was financially driven. And so you, like I said, you already said, you know, that it's your trigger with it rather than a problem that he likes these things. So this is actually kind of an interesting opportunity for you.
It reminds me of the that scene from The Breakup, which we play at the conference, it seems like every year, when Jennifer Aniston says to Vince Vaughn, it's not about you liking the ballet. It's about the person you love likes the ballet. The
ballet, right.
That's pretty much what we're talking about, right?
Yeah, she says to him, you know, and you still haven't taken me to the ballet. And he's like, but you know, and now you're Vince Vaughn in this situation. You know, he's like, but you know, I hate the ballet. I can't stand the ballet. And like Todd said, she says, but you don't need to like the ballet. You just need to, you love me and I love the ballet. So go with me once a year, you know, like, this is actually, like you said, very connected to Amanda's question about respecting, you know, Todd can't stand musicals. And so most of the time I do not even ask him to go. I take my children now because they love musicals like I do. But there have been occasions where one time he actually got me tickets to a musical.
Which one?
The Billy Joel one.
Oh yeah. I was moving out because that's Billy Joel.
Yeah.
That's like a concert.
And then you saw Hamilton. We weren't together. But there, you know, sometimes we do those kind of things, just like Amanda would ask about baseball but at the same time, have compassion for yourself. Like, I'm going to take it back the other way, that don't judge yourself too harshly about having that trigger response, because that's your history. And it will be an interesting uncovering for you when you ask him a question. Just you, the next time he drives by a house and says, sweet house, if you say something different than you normally do, you've already shifted everything. You don't have to go on this big thing about how now you're going to like these things and see how different. You just saying, what do you like about that house? And he may say back, you know, blah, blah, blah. What do you like about it? And then you've already shifted your dynamic just with that one question. And that may become, you just practice it.
And to your point, if you wait for the other person to start, then you got two people that are waiting for the other person to make a shift.
Yeah, I'll ask when he asks.
And here's the deal. You guys are the ones on the Zen Talk. You guys are the ones that are on this podcast. You guys have information at your disposal that your husbands probably don't have.
You're the leaders.
You're the leaders. Sorry, that's
everybody
just the way it
listening.
Is.
If you're listening to this and you are interested in self-awareness, this is, I'm sorry to say it so, but this is your job. Mm-hmm. This is, you know this stuff. You have this innate skill to recognize a situation and an opportunity to shift a dynamic. Some people are not as conscious as you. I'm not saying you're better than them. I'm not saying you're more important than them. I'm saying you came in with a skill set of empathy and intuition and understanding, and you see the world differently. And so this is your job.
And be careful of the ego, because the ego will say, yes, but 3 years ago, I spent a whole summer appreciating whatever that thing was that he liked, and it didn't work. You know, there's always going to be some voice in your head saying, you tried that.
Well, kind of like Amanda's dark thought. That's why I want her to have some compassion for those, when those thoughts come up of things could be better. If, you know, like, we all go down those rabbit holes, you know, but remember, it is the ego. Remember, it is a rabbit hole. And over time, that lag time will decrease. Mm-hmm. Like, you won't stay in that dark place. Because I think the reason we start, you know, depression really by nature is, there's a lot of different reasons for depression, so I don't want to summarize it too simply, but it usually, it's feeling bad and then feeling bad about feeling bad and then being scared that we feel bad and we feel bad and we, you know, same with anxiety. A panic attack comes from a thought that keeps spinning and spinning and then our heart starts to race. If we can just notice that this is just thoughts people have and it doesn't make it true, you know, it's not.
Your brain is lying to you.
Yeah.
Your thoughts are lying to you. Okay, so we're almost out of time. I'm going to do one thing. I hope it works. I'm going to mute Dawn and then I'm going to share my screen.
Uh-oh.
Don't worry.
Are you doing?
Just chill, Will. I'm going to share this. And then I'm going to go here and I'm going to go to Zen Parenting Radio. So if you guys could see my laptop or what's on my screen, just give me a thumbs up. Okay. So Nikki could see it. So I just want to take you to a specific thing on our webpage because I got some feedback earlier today about that people don't know when the Zen talks are. So I'm going to do a better job. So if you go to live events,
this is on our website.
This is on our website. So on the upper, there's a few different ways to go to live events, but I just want to do this. And I think that our computer's slow just because we're doing the Zen talk at the same time. But this is also a way for me to kind of tell everybody when our next Zen talks are. So let's scroll down. Oh, come on, computer.
Our internet has been slow today.
I know.
And I don't like it. I start to get a little entitled about my internet speed.
I know.
If it was fast yesterday, I want it fast today.
It's here to teach us something though, sweetie.
Where's all of our events?
I know. It looks like we don't have any. There's nothing. We're out of business. All right. So it's not working. Here's the deal. Go to Zen Parenting. Go to Get Zen and click on attend live events. And all of our
Zen talks
are there. They should be here right now, but for some reason it's not working.
Not only are the Zen talks there, but if we schedule an author like Gemma Hartley, that's going to be on there. If there's a micro community, that's going to be on there. It's coming up now. And so it will be here for you to see. So the next one is May 24th.
So the next one is May 24th at noon, I think. Yeah, because this one's at night. So the next one will be May 24th at 12 o'clock Chicago time. And then the next one will be June 4th.
And that's with Gemma.
That's with Gemma. And we'll post the next one after that. I don't know what. So I just wanted to share that with everybody who might be watching or listening. So, because we're not really good at, I'm still kind of coming up with better ways to communicate.
You send out those emails though.
I do, but some people don't read it as thoroughly, you know, everybody's got 150 emails.
So basically they need to know there's always a place they can go. Mm-hmm. So whenever you're wondering when a Zen talk is, zenparentingradio.com, live events.
And we're also going to try to put it on the Facebook page. There's a event
calendar
thing on
okay,
there.
Cool.
So anyway, so that's it. All right. So it's 8 o'clock. So we are out of time. I'm going to unmute everybody real quick before everybody leaves. Unmute all. And everybody say goodbye.
Bye, it's time for bed.
Kathy's in her pajamas.
I'm so ready for bed.
All right, guys, keep trucking.
Bye,
friends.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Good job, sweetie.